Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better on this week's episodes. In the red corner, we're off to Mars as Arnie tries to work out who he is, Quaid or Hauser, Hauser or Quaid, Hugh Gore, guns, and giant alien reactors in 1990s Total Recall.
Your mind. It is the center of your life. It is everything you hear. Everything you see. Everything you feel. It is everything you are. How would you know if someone stole your mind?
While in the blue corner, crime. It sucks, right? Well, what if you could stop all crime before it even happened? If it sounds perfect, it's not, as Tom Cruise finds out firsthand in 2002's Minority Report.
Okay, Jed, what's coming?
Double homicide, one male, one female. Killer's male, white, 40s.
Set up a perimeter and tell them we're en route.
I'm placing you under arrest for the future murder of Sarah Marks.
Give the man his hat.
The future can be seen.
All we have to run on are the images that they produce.
We see what they see.
There hasn't been a murder in 6 years. There's nothing wrong with the system. It is perfect.
I agree.
Murder can be stopped.
Tell me exactly what it is you're looking for.
Flaws.
Did we get any false positives?
We are arresting individuals who have broken no law.
But they will.
The fact that you prevent it from happening doesn't change the fact that it was going to happen.
The system can't be wrong.
So what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out! It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders! You think this is the real Quaid? It is! I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley. Oh, how are you both? Vicky, looking very summery.
Thanks.
Really nice, a very pastel-y shirt.
Yeah, it is.
Chris, embodying autumn.
Yeah, you were wearing a dark green jacket as well, so...
I know, I didn't say there's anything wrong. Why is everything a criticism?
Because it's the second time you've mentioned it.
Because I'm really pro-autumn. I love the season. I love anyone who represents it in one man. I think it's great. What's the news, Victoria?
I thought I'd lost my favourite sock, and then I found it. And it was just in a different drawer. Can you believe that? Imagine the stress.
I mean, I think the bigger question is, you have one favourite sock. What's the other sock
in
the pair?
Sorry, no, I thought I'd lost one of my favourite socks.
Right.
One of the pair.
What makes them the favourite?
They're just really stylish.
Okay. I mean, obviously, we're listened to by a lot of people who are very into fashion and autumn. tell me a little bit about why they're so
stylish. They go with everything, but they elevate an outfit at the same time. So they're black, and that's fine. They've got a sort of a medium rib and then three fake pearl buttons on the back. So you just get a little cheeky bit of decoration just poking out the back of your shoe. Oof. Says you've thought about
it. You're not wearing them now, are you?
No, I'm not.
That's a shame, because we're filming this episode.
It's too risky to take them out of the house, I've realised, because it showed me how dear they are to me.
So they're house socks, but they're
house socks now, yeah.
Chris, any opinion on socks?
Yeah, I wear them.
Excellent news! And so ends the small talk section. So, this week, Total Recall versus Minority Report. Victoria's choices. How come?
Well, I was clue-led this week. And when I came up with Short Dick Energy, I was so pleased with myself that I tried to make everything fit around that. That's not true. You told me to.
I didn't tell you to.
Chris told me to. Lots of reasons. Chris told me to. They are two films that have stayed with me over the years. And I think it was suggested in our listener suggestions. And we're doing a special season, which Chris will tell you about, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure. Sure, that's great. Yeah. Chris, do you want to talk about the special season later or now?
Can talk about it now. We're doing Spielberg.
We're doing Spielberg.
We're doing Spielberg paired with a non-Spielberg this week and next week. And then we're doing four Indiana Jones movies over 2 weeks.
Yes, we are. Yeah. It's exciting. I'm fucking thrilled, man.
Yeah, I can't wait.
It's going to be great. All four indie movies. But back to today. So, reminders once again of the wonderful clue you gave on last week's episode.
Short Dick Energy.
Short Dick Energy. One of my favourite clues. Chris, you followed that up on Twitter with...
Both these films are kindred spirit.
Okay, so can we talk about that clue?
Sure.
So is there another level to that clue? Like, because obviously it's a clue. So people look into our clues on Twitter. Mm. We are at ClashPod on Twitter, also on Instagram, at ClashPod. Mm. So what's the spirit element?
Well, it's a phrase, kindred spirits.
Right, and that's
when,
all it is.
When two things are similar. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Do you not know why I've done the clue?
I know.
Tell him.
I know why the clue is the clue, but I think it doesn't work as a clue for Twitter because spirits makes people think of ghosts. It feels like it works on more than one level because it's existing in the stratosphere of a clue.
Oh, yeah, you can't take the clue on its own. No. They come as a pair.
Right.
The idea is to listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to some of these guesses.
Well, kindred, by the way, in case you don't know, because a lot of people didn't, I didn't know until this week, the name Philip K. Dick, the K stands for kindred.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
That's amazing. Right. So now the clue's perfect.
Now the clue actually works. Turns out a lot of people...
That's why it had a capital K.
Right.
Wow.
It's a name.
Well, don't tell me. Tell Paul Logue, who went with Beetlejuice versus the Frighteners, because of spirits. Gary Bailey, Ghostbusters versus Evolution, because of spirits. Also, he goes for the Frighteners versus 13 Ghosts. You know what they have in common? Spirits. You see, people really focused on the spirits this week.
If it had been a little K, I would have been fine, but it was a big K. Mm. Got to look into that.
Peter Mahoney, Beetlejuice versus Casper. Sam Turner, Ghost versus The Sixth Sense. A lot of spirit guesses. Mm. Camillo goes with Twins versus Junior. It took me a while, but I'm thinking because Danny DeVito is Short Dick Energy.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I can take from that.
Short Danny Energy, surely.
Yeah.
Matt gets pretty close. He's worked out the Philip K. Dick clue. Minority Report versus the Adjustment Bureau. Not quite there. Our winner this week. Congratulations. It's a week where we only have one right answer. Oh,
almost like the clues were perfect, Vicky.
Peter Stirrup, congratulations. He wasn't stumped by kindred spirits. He was slightly. He went, I was convinced it was always Short Dick Dreyfus spirit. But couldn't pair it, so he went with Total Recall versus Minority Report.
I also like the fact he then got cocky, because when I thanked everyone for their guesses and said when the films would be revealed, he replied with a Total Recall gif.
Right.
He's that confident that he's got it right.
Well, his confidence was not misplaced. Congratulations, Peter. Your prize is a memory implant of 2 weeks with the three of us. Don't worry, we cover all bases. One of us is athletic, one is demure, and the other is sleazy. I'll let you work out which. Connections, then. What do you got?
Well, I've just got the big one, which is really obvious.
Go on.
But so Minority Report started life as a sequel to Total Recall, so they are linked in that way.
Yeah.
Look, tech, self-driving cars and holograms are in both movies.
Yep.
Play quite big roles.
15% of the profits, both Spielberg and Cruise picked 15% of the profits rather than a fee to keep the budget down for Minority Report. Arnold Schwarzenegger took 15%. 10% of the profits and a $10 million fee because he's Arnie. USA Today features in both Minority Report as a digital paper, and you get Mars Today and Total Recall. Mm.
And on that sort of route, advertising exposition, we learn a lot of plot from television adverts in both these movies in quite a lazy way.
Yeah. Yeah. Short Dick Energy. Both movies just use the first act as the portion of Philip K. Dick's novel, short stories that he's written, and then go off in their own way.
Our heroes have strange head trauma in both movies. Arnie obviously has to stick something up his nose into his brain.
Take something out of his brain.
Yeah, to get it out. And then, Tom has his eyes removed.
True. Mm. That's the true. The ending might not be what we think it is in both films.
Mm. Mm. My last one.
What's that look?
Is it not? Tell me later.
Okay, well, we'll get to it.
I hope so.
We will. I can promise you. That's a promise.
My last one is clairvoyance, which is the reason that Minority Report was nearly the sequel to Total Recall.
Yeah, they both had very short-lived TV series, Minority Report and Total Recall 2070. And finally, Colin Farrell.
Yes.
Oh,
that
good
was
one.
My other one. Yes.
Good one.
Mm.
Didn't think of that.
Yeah. Obviously, Minority Report and featuring in the only mention I'm hoping on this podcast of the 2012 Total Recall reboots. Right, let's get into it. On Thursday, Chris tries to remember everything about Minority Report, which means today I'm saying, Cohagen, give these people air in Total Recall. Let me take you on a journey. Arnie is Doug Quaid, a construction worker on Earth. Except he's not. He's married to his gorgeous wife, Sharon Stone. Except he's not. And she's not. After visiting Recall to go on a virtual sex holiday, things go to shit. His friends want to kill him, his wife wants to kill him, and Michael Ironside really wants to kill him. So he hotfoots it to Mars on the advice of himself, Hauser, who's not really him, but he is, sort of. Anyway, after a lot of running around Mars being chased by Michael Ironside, who by now has never wanted to kill anything more, Quaid wisecracks his way to an alien reactor and turns it on, saving everyone, except Cohagen, whose head turns inside out. The end. Ladies and gentlemen, for your consideration, Total Recall. So, my history with this movie, to kick us off, I've seen it probably 7 or 8 times, closing in on 10 times now. The first time is obviously the most powerful, watched it exactly the right time, not at the cinema, but at home on VHS, must have been about 11 years old, it's 1991, about 11 years old, and for a brief period, I think I thought this was the greatest movie I had ever seen in the history of cinema. This was a massive film for me and my friends at school. I have a very distinct memory of my friend Phil Stark, who saw it before us, running round using his flask as a gun from his packed lunch, going, I want my brain back. And it broke my heart when I finally watched it. And that fucking line isn't in the fucking movie. I was like, dude, you can't. There's so many great quotes. Why make one up? And yet, I always watch it thinking, maybe it is. Maybe I've just missed it. I want my brain back, which would work in the film.
Be a good title for a movie.
It would be a great title for a movie. So yeah, I've watched it so many times since then. It never fails to put a smile on my face. V.
I've seen it once or twice before, but I watched it when I was a bit older. So I didn't remember a lot of the plot. What I remember is really silly key moments. They're not key moments. That's wrong. I'm just going to say nail varnish. Mm. So for something, the only thing I could truly remember until I watched it, I was like, oh yeah, that bit is the woman, the receptionist at the clinic, just doing the instant change of nail varnish. And the people that I watched that film with were like, that's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, that is really brilliant. How does that not exist? I was watching it this time going, I mean, surely there is some kind of material that like a digital false nail you can put on that you can then touch with a pen and just immediately does that.
Yeah, there isn't.
It's such a shame. Maybe that's because that is, if we had that right now, we wouldn't celebrate that moment as much. But that is about the only bit of future tech in Total Recall, apart from traveling to Mars, that doesn't exist now.
Mm-hmm.
Chris?
I remember reading about this in Empire at the start of 1990 and being a bit scared of it, as everything they were talking about seemed to be suggesting this was going to be the most violent film of all time. And it was an 18, so I couldn't see it in the cinema. But I did buy and read the novelisation. And then by the time it was out on video...
Oh, you see. I mentioned a novelisation last week and it's like, oh, can we not talk novelisations? We're talking about the film. Only film canon on this podcast.
Yep, and I will be doing that. By the time it came out on video, Terminator 2 was in the cinema though, and that was 15. And I could get into that. Mm. And so I think that's the summer I started watching 18s. I thought I was ready. You're ready for this, Chris. You're 13.
I'm so confused. Why did it scare you finding out that it was going to be violent?
I hadn't watched any violent films up to that point, really. I'd seen Commando, but I'd closed my eyes for some of it because my cousin told me I had to.
Right.
If I was allowed to watch it, right. as previously discussed. Mm. Yeah, I hadn't watched many 18s when I was 12.
Okay.
I was a bit of a wimp.
See, I think that was the right way of going about it because we'll talk about it because it's for Hoven. No, but seriously, my mum let me watch. I go on about my mum let me watch Jaws when I was too young. But besides that, because that's actually a PG and that's just a bit scary, and I've never been in the sea since. Although we proved back on another pod that I have, so that was a lie.
Yeah,
I'm a liar. We proved I'm a liar. However, RoboCop I saw when I was about 13 years old.
Yeah,
and that fucked me up more than any other film. It's horrifying. Just as a kid, Murphy's Death, Ed 209, and more than anything, Toxic Waste Man. That stayed with me. Right, do you want to know a little bit about the production of this movie?
Yes, please.
Okay. This is where I just sort of want to preempt anything you say, Chris, because there's a lot of information here, and I know you think sometimes, you know, I go too deep. I just want us to be honest with each other.
No, I know. Look, I normally try and come... I feel like it's good to have, like, 3 pages on each film of notes.
Oh, my God, is that how much you do? Mm. I do 3 pages total, always, and if it goes over, I take stuff out.
I've done 19 pages today.
Why?
I don't feel bad.
I've got 8,500 words. Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Woo. Okay, great. Great. So let's... I mean, we may... Well, we're either going to be doing a slightly longer pod today or we're just not going to be talking about the movie very much and just talk about the history of the movie. Anyway,
you read the short story though, didn't you?
Nope, I did not.
It's only 19 pages.
Is it really?
Oh, well, sorry. I really meant to.
If I'd known that, I would have. I can do 19 pages.
I know.
So, the story with the movie Total Recall begins back in the 1970s with writers Dan O'Bannon and Ronald Chassette, even before they worked on Alien together. So Chassette bought the rights to Philip K. Dick's We Can Remember It For You wholesale short story. Now, Dan O'Bannon said in 2007 that the movie rights to Philip Dick's stories were ridiculously cheap back then. Ronald Chassette picked it up for about $2,000. But then after Blade Runner, all of a sudden, the Dick estate just ran his price up through the ceiling. So they've got this, or at least Chassette has this, and they have differing ideas of what to do with turning it into a feature script. So Dan O'Bannon starts writing, and he writes up the first act on Earth, and he's like, it seemed obvious to me that this guy has to go to Mars now. The whole thing is his obsession with being James Bond on Mars. And I said to Ronnie, I said the rest of the movie should be a cross between Casablanca and a James Bond movie. Chassette says, I don't agree at all. I think it should be a Western on Mars. To which O'Bannon says, I said that was a terrible idea and I wasn't going to write it. So begins a real to and fro between Chassette and O'Bannon, where Chassette keeps getting other writers in to fulfill his vision. And according to O'Bannon, no one likes this vision. So he then keeps going back to O'Bannon and going, what are your ideas? So O'Bannon sort of plays along and he writes a second act and he says, I got into Mars and I continued with that lighthearted tone. Imagine the best of the Bond movies, Goldfinger or something. I continued it in that tone. And eventually O'Bannon writes an act three. But that eventually wasn't the act three we see in this film. O'Bannon says of that, he finally got the picture financed and the others now involved completely rewrote the third act into what I consider incoherence. So the first two acts are more or less Phil, Dick and me, and the last act is Ronnie Chassette. As I watch the movie, everything it's been building it to in the last 20 minutes or more just crumbles into chaos. So I read that and I watched it after I'd read that. And for the first time, I sort of looked at that third act and how it holds up to the rest of the film. Do you think Total Recall starts to fall apart in the third act?
Where would you say the third act starts?
So I think it's difficult because when we get into Gary Goldman...
In the mines, maybe.
I think it's roughly around the time that he has found out that Hauser did the dirty on
him. Yeah, and then you've got this sort of the race to the thing. No, I don't think it falls apart, to be honest.
No, I don't either. Chris?
No, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
It works fine.
Yeah. It's weird because there's some contradiction here. So basically, from everything I read in this 2007 interview, it sounds like O'Bannon is basically writing James Bond on Mars, which doesn't sound a million miles away from what Ronnie Chassett wanted, which was, in his words, Raiders of the Lost Ark on Mars. I can see a through line between the two. But then you get like these stories about what O'Bannon's original third act was, and I couldn't find any corroboration on this, and if Chris couldn't, then I'm in the clear, but we'll find out. Because there are stories about his final act being that Arnie's character, or Doug Quaid, or Doug Quayle, I think as he was back then, he is transformed into a godlike synthetic being housing the entirety of the Martian race.
Mm-hmm.
Which is no ending to any Bond movie I know, where Bond envelops Spectre as a sentient being.
A lot of that material comes from Cronenberg, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, he introduced the concept of the mutants. He allotted a lot more screen time to Quarto. I mean, stuff you'd expect from David Cronenberg.
Mm.
And he had an elaborate dream sequence where Quarto morphed into the Sphinx and then into a kind of phosphorescent vagina.
Right.
Yeah, because Cronenberg created Quarto from scratch. He wasn't in it at all.
No,
until the
whole mutant angle came from Cronenberg.
Which doesn't surprise you when you're like, the master of body horror is going to stick some mutants in there. The one thing that doesn't surprise me, because Chassette is like, I want this to be, a fun Raiders of the Lost Ark romp. How you end up taking it to Cronenberg, and then how you end up slightly surprised when he rips all the tongue-in-cheek humour out and makes it a really cerebral paranoia tale, which is what he wanted to do. He wanted William Hurt as Douglas Quaid, a psychologically wrecked man struggling to piece his memories together. And apparently it was way more faithful to Philip K. Dick's story. But Chassette said to him, you know what you've done? You've done the Philip K. Dick version. And Cronenberg said, isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? And Chassette went, no, I want Raiders of the Lost Ark on Mars, which feels like something you should say up front.
But Cronenberg's never going to do that, is he?
No. The one thing, we got Quarto from Cronenberg, but Quarto from Cronenberg. But the one thing that we didn't ever see, which when I read about it, it breaks my heart. Did you read about the Gansables?
No.
So this was an idea from Chassette that Cronenberg ran with. Chassette created basically camels on Mars outfitted with oxygen masks.
Brilliant.
Sounds great. Cronenberg then turned them into sewer-dwelling mutant camels that fed on the dead bodies that were deposited down there.
Right.
They didn't make it into the final cut. More is the pity. Mutant camels, mutant sewer-dwelling camels. How the fuck do you not include that in a movie?
That you look at your budget.
Yeah. So Cronenberg departs, and then we're into a period where Richard Dreyfuss is considered for the lead for a while. And there's another version that almost happens that has Patrick Swayze in the lead with the director of Driving Miss Daisy, Bruce Beresford, behind the camera. And this is when Dino De Laurentiis has it, because Chassette takes it to Disney because they first look after the Alien script, and then they say no. So Dino De Laurentiis gets it. And this is also the period where Arnie is in the background. Now, Arnie finds out about Total Recall around the time of Raw Deal and is like, I want to do this. And he's friends with Dino De Laurentiis. And he's like, can I do it? Dino De Laurentiis says, and this is a quote from Arnie just last year, Schwarzenegger, I like you being Conan. I don't like you being Total Recall. I have Jeff Bridges. So...
why are you doing as the Sacha Baron Cohen character Bruno?
I'm just trying out a few accents as we warm up to getting to Mars, because that's when I'm going to hit my stride on this episode.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Yeah, so then Dino De Laurentiis' company goes bust. Arnie, straight on the phone to the Carolco guys, Mario Casar and Andy Vanya, who he'd done Red Heat with. He's like, buy the rights, which they do for $3 million. Then, as I said, Arnie gets a $10 million fee plus 15% of the profits because he's freaking Arnie. And by now, after Twins, he is officially a big deal, which was the previous year.
Yeah, it's amazing because he'd just done Red Heat for Carolco. Mm. I don't know if either of you have seen Red Heat.
Mm.
It was not a hit.
No.
And so it's amazing he managed to negotiate that deal off the back of Twins.
Listen to it. He gets to pick his co-stars. These are all the things that were in the contract. He gets to pick his co-stars, gets final say on the script. final say on any promotion. And most importantly, he gets to pick the director. Cue a chance meeting in a fancy Hollywood Italian restaurant where, completely by chance, Arnie sees Verhoeven having some food, goes over to the table. RoboCop's just come out and he wants to tell him how much he loved that movie. And they get on like a house on fire. They decide there and then that they want to work together. And as Arnie leaves, he suddenly realizes Verhoeven would be perfect for Total Recall, the whole dystopian future element. Or as Arnie puts it, I drive home from lunch and I say to myself, I'm such a fucking idiot. I should have gone right away to Total Recall. Anyway, it's not a problem because Verhoeven does. The Arnie accent will get better. Again, this is warm up for later in the show. Verhoeven says, yep, I'll do it. And interestingly, Verhoeven says that Arnie was in the running for RoboCop. They never auditioned him. But both him and his co-star in Total Recall, Michael Ironside, were looked at for RoboCop, but they were both too big, too bulky. They wanted someone more svelte who didn't look ridiculous in the armor. So Verhoeven steps on board. At this point, there are about 40 drafts of this script, which he starts going through, but he says there is a problem, which is the climax is one long 40-minute chase that abandoned the mental theme of earlier in the movie. Step forward, Gary Goldman. So Gary Goldman, I ended up listening to a long interview with Gary Goldman. He'd written Navy SEALs at this point, or he was writing Navy SEALs. I can't remember the chronology. Anyway, he ends up working with Verhoeven. Now, a lot of people say that Arnie brought Gary Goldman on board, but it's actually Verhoeven. And it happens because Gary Goldman is working. Gary Goldman, we've talked about on the Big Trouble in Little China episode. He wrote the original script for that. And he's working on a new movie with Verhoeven called Warrior. And he gets a call, does Gary Goldman, from Bruce Beresford to come and work on Total Recall, which he was doing with Patrick Swayze in Australia. And Goldman says, I can't, I'm not doing that. I'm working with Verhoeven on this script for Warrior. And then Verhoeven gets a call from Arnie going, will you do Total Recall? And Verhoeven turns to Goldman and goes, yeah, I'm leaving your Warrior film. I'm going to go to Total Recall. But then brings him on as this script doctor to help get the final act into shape. He said, Gary Goldman, that the good ideas seem to have run out of the Dr. Edgemar scene, and I wanted to keep the surprises coming. And he had to make a lot of changes to the dialogue for Arnie, because the original script was meant for someone the polar opposite of Arnie, a real weak character. And so he was an accountant, they had to turn him into a construction worker. But I'm going to leave all the Gary Goldman stuff for Thursday because I think you're going to tell us about Gary Goldman.
Yeah, I am. But it is interesting that the Schwarzenegger, he had a real vision for it. As you say, like this was a bank clerk in the story and in the early scripts. And so that's why Richard Dreyfuss makes sense and William Hurt makes sense. And it makes more sense that he'd be more believable as a spy because he doesn't stand out, a Richard Dreyfuss or a William Hurt, whereas Arnold Schwarzenegger, that guy's a spy. Doesn't work in True Lies either, I don't think. Him undercover is just ridiculous. But Arnie's vision was he wanted to make someone strong and tough become vulnerable, completely break them down. And it is a really, it's an interesting approach to the material.
It's an interesting approach. And as we go through it, we'll prove again and again why it doesn't work for exactly the reasons you've just said. But I mean, Arnie really wanted to do this. And there is no doubt when you read all the interviews around this, this project would not have happened and it would not have got the budget and it would not have been as great as it was if it hadn't been for Arnie taking the reins and making sure Verhoeven got to do what he wanted to do. He kept Chousette on board, which Chousette was really grateful for. He was on set every day. Gary Goldman was on set every day to make any changes that needed making. And then he handled all the promotion. He had the trailer recut because he said the first trailer made it look like a $20 million movie. So he was like the Arnie that we knew about in the 90s, which was this machine.
And he had a vision. He had a vision for the character, but he also had a vision for his career. And this was a turning point.
Yeah. 100%. That aside, that's about it. The only other person that I really have to mention because he makes this movie for me is our old friend Rob Bottin, the special effects genius who did 99% of the creature effects in The Thing, our Thing episode. Well worth a listen. Terrible result that week, or at least a terrible vote from Chris. I can't remember which.
The Thing won.
Good. A great result that week. A great result. Rob Bottin is brilliant.
Genius.
Fantastic. Because the stuff with the three-breasted sex worker, which I Can't wait to talk about
it. That's the first thing you
said. I can't believe it.
So much other stuff going on.
There's just, it opens with someone's eyes popping out of their butt. They're fucking three-titted woman. Just as a for instance.
Yeah, just as an example.
Yeah.
I was 11 years old when I first saw this.
You should have been scared to death.
He got a special achievement Oscar, so well done him for his work on this film. That is about it. It goes on to become a massive hit. 160 million on a not cheap $50 million budget. There's some discrepancies. Some people say this was one of the most expensive films ever made at the time. Some people say it wasn't. Either way, big hit. Fifth highest grossing movie of 1990. Any guesses what was number one?
Oh,
1990.
Look who's talking.
No.
It was Ghost.
It was Ghost. Oh.
Followed by Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman was in three. There was a little movie.
Turtles 2?
No.
No, it's the one of the action. Oh,
no, it's a John Hughes one.
Oh, Home Alone.
Home Alone, yeah. And then our old friend Dances with Wolves was at number four. But Total Recall was at number fifth. And its legacy is that for the next 10 years, Arnie was pretty much the biggest movie star on the planet, a blockbuster icon. So that was thanks to Total Recall. Shall we talk about a movie?
Mm.
So we open with Jerry Goldsmith's great score. It's one of his favourite scores. I really like it. And I like it because I'm like, hey, this sounds like Alien.
Oh, I was going to say it's the Conan score.
Oh, yeah.
So he stuck together a couple of scores, I guess.
There's a bit where you see the miniature of Mars and there's a real alien vibe to it. But I like it as a score. It's very drum heavy, which I seem to remember all Arnie's scores being Terminator, Predator, this, are all like dun-dun-dun, like Arnie's coming.
I know we had a 9 Clash Pod man last week, but Jerry Goldsmith, that puts him up to 8.
Ooh.
Alien, Gremlins, Inner Space, Gremlins 2, Basic Instinct, Congo, LA Confidential and Total Recall. Congratulations to Jerry.
Well then, Jerry.
Rest in peace.
So Arnie's having a dream. He's on a cliff on Mars with a girl and he falls down the cliff, idiot, smashes his visor and gives off one of the best things about this movie, some amazing Arnie grunts. Love it. I love this opening because at 11 years old, I remember finding it really shocking.
Mm.
As an opening, and the fact that it sets up the dangers of the atmosphere of Mars right from the off, and also you see Mars and you're like, when are we going there? Brilliant way to start it.
Mm, those miniatures that they used to create Mars were huge, and they look so impressive. I think they look great today.
They're amazing. You see the set guys standing amongst them, and they're vast, massive things. So he wakes up, and wham, he's awake. Wham, he's married to Sharon Stone. Wham, I'm 11 years old, and I'm in love for the first time. I don't know about you guys, but I had a massive crush on Sharon Stone in this movie.
She's beautiful, yeah.
So good.
Yeah, and also, she might kill you.
Right? That's literally right.
I'm sorry.
I'd be really interested to talk about it because it is important. Like, you don't have to pretend. Like, that's a good. I mean, I get it.
Super
I do
horny.
Get it.
It's because she's all things in one. She's an adoring wife, she's a highly trained killer, and she's a little bit kinky. You can tie me up.
Tick, tick, tick.
I was like, what's going on?
I listened to the commentary from 2001 that is Verhoeven and Schwarzenegger, which is quite enjoyable. But this scene, it's a bit off. Verhoeven explains that Sharon Stone refused to take her clothes off.
What a bitch.
But Verhoeven then starts laughing and says, I took revenge on Basic Instinct.
Jesus.
Paul, you're not supposed to say that.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's dark. Yeah, wow. Wow. Yeah, I didn't know there was, it sort of works for me that she doesn't take her clothes off. I mean.
Yeah, well, she didn't have to.
At 11 years old, I'd have been a bit scared of that.
Yeah.
But.
She hasn't got two tits. So. I think. I mean.
Yeah, we've seen it. Yeah. We've all seen
it. Just confirming.
So, we get this, the flat that Arnie lives in. I remember being sort of like wowed by everything in this whole sequence. Like the video wall is super cool and the interactive news, which obviously done in RoboCop and go on to do even more in Starship Troopers. But it was really cool, you know, and it was cut through with that Verhoeven jet black humour, that way that it's the news reporter that sort of disassociation from what you're seeing and what they're saying. Like they're going, you know, the Mars security force used minimal force to kill the stop the rebels, and you're watching people gunning people down.
Yeah, but his films are very political, and he does put it in a fun way. You know, in the background, we've got him talking about colonialism and imperialism, yeah, and these issues that are going to come up time and time again in this film. But you don't really know you're being sort of spoken to in that way, because everything that's happening is so much fun.
Well, yeah, especially with Starship Troopers, where people were like, oh, what's Verhoeven doing? He's celebrating the military for the first time. He's like, no.
Look at the uniforms, guys.
Rewind. Look at Neil Patrick Harris. There you go. Come on. All right, we'll continue with this after this short break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So, Arnie's off to work as a construction worker. We get to see some of the awesome future tech that the best sci-fis do really well. Just little great world-building things that just aren't there for any real plot reason, are just there because why the hell not? So the favourite thing for me at this point was either the giant X-ray body scanner.
Yeah, I love that.
Isn't it cool?
Yeah. It looks really good today.
It does look really good. Yeah.
Doesn't and it's also slightly funny as well, because everyone's skeleton is a bit like...
but I mean, it's literally his skeleton.
Is it?
I mean, not literally a skeleton, but yeah, they've used his. It's the one digital effect in the movie,
right?
And that is they've used it. They did the stuff all over his body, so they could get his skeleton. Okay. So it's not just a random animated man.
Okay,
and I like it because it happens for a split second here, and it's setting it up for the payoff later.
Yes,
and not even a payoff much later, like a payoff in about 20 minutes time. You're like, it's great. And the TV's on the tube. I remember that being a massive deal to me when I watched this in 1991.
Don't you think it's interesting? Because when we talk about Minority Report, you know my obsession with early technology and people visualising future tech and how sometimes we get it really right, like Minority Report, and sometimes almost right, like Total Recall, I think. So TVs on the tube, when you're thinking of that, you're like, okay, in the future we'll have TVs on the tube, but they don't make them small. And so they couldn't quite make that mental leap that we do have TVs on the tube effectively because we've all got TVs in our pocket. But to make them micro wasn't in their gift. I just find that fascinating that you can make that leap, but you can't quite go, oh yeah, and Wi-Fi.
Well, what I'd say is sometimes they do have made that leap, but then visually it's not going to work, so they have to do it a different way. For example, in Minority Report, when he's looking at the screens, he's using the gloves.
Yeah.
The tech guys told him, you won't need gloves to do that.
Yeah.
But they just said, no, because the audience won't really believe it. We're going to give him these gloves because visually it's going to look better.
Yeah.
And it's going to be more believable for the audience right now.
Right.
And same with there, maybe that you just need a big TV screen on that so the audience can see it.
Yeah, that's, I see that.
Setting up right now. We meet Dr. Edgemar for the first time for the memory of a lifetime. Recall, recall, recall. So he's going to be coming back. Arnie works on a construction site. Doesn't matter what he does there because he's Arnie and his muscles are out and he's holding a massive fucking drill. He's just breaking shit. He is breaking stuff up.
I read reviews saying, oh, it's not believable Arnie is a construction worker. That's one of the few jobs where he is believable, holding a drill.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't honestly know. I think Arnie even knows what he's doing in that scene. He's just like, give me a drill and a sleeveless top and make everyone else wear lumberjack shirts. Otherwise, it won't be believable. Everyone else in there is like wearing a massive shirt to cover their arms because it would just be like people, you need to look sort of like you can work here alongside Arnie as opposed to be children.
But his mate Harry in that scene, you know, in that clever bit where you're not sure whether Harry's on his side or not, that's what the character looks like in the short story. That's what our protagonist should have been, is that schlub.
It could
have been Danny DeVito, could have got the other twin.
Well, yeah, but it's Robert Costanza, who we all remember as the dickhead cop in Die Hard 2. That's all I ever, whenever I see him, I'm like, the dickhead cop in Die Hard 2. But yeah, you're not really sure if he's on his side or not. And you're like, I'm pretty sure he's a bad guy from the massive look he gives him after Arnie goes back to work. There's nothing subtle about that.
I give you that look sometimes on this podcast that I'm still your friend.
That is horribly close to the truth.
Only when you get the stuff wrong.
Doug is told, don't go to recall. Again, we're setting so much stuff up here. And Harry's like, they messed up my friend's brain. They're bad people. Do not go there. Doug ain't listening. He's off to recall. Cool nail polish pen. I've written absolutely right. And then Bob McLean turns up, who is pure salesman. And he's like, question. So when Arnie goes, I'm not interested in Saturn. I want to go to Mars. There's a bit where he's sort of like, Mars. And it's really shifty. It's like he knows something.
Yeah.
But there is nothing he can know at that point unless there is something that we haven't really been informed of, which is that you get like the schizoid embolism because of the Mars program, which is a bit of a stretch. There is no reason for him to be a little bit shifty about why he can't send Arnie to Mars.
Yes.
I haven't worked that out, that one. Bit of a weird one. But anyway, he goes, yeah, okay, I'll send you to Mars. Quaid picks the secret agent package. And so now he's in recall and he has to design his love interest for his virtual sex holiday.
Tick, 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 tick.
Well, all of it. All of it.
Yeah.
Big, small, all of it.
No, brunette, athletic, sleazy and demure.
I do like the fact that the woman doctor, I don't know her name, and she says, be honest. Mm. And I just think that's a good line because if you're Arnie, you might not want to be that man. Like you might, I don't know, you might want, she might be like, oh, I've accidentally pressed sleazy. But he's like, no, fine. Which I liked.
Yeah. But it's sort of, I think in its own weird way, this is Verhoeven satirizing like femme fatales or the action women in movies of this time because like, you know, sleazy and demure is like, you know, and athletic. It's like, these are, sleazy and demure don't really go together.
No.
And yet that is kind of what, like, audiences required from female, well, female actresses to play these roles. These are the kind of roles that they were expected to play. It's kind of crazy. So we get a few little bits that Gary Goldman dropped in here. So, for example, seeing Melina's face, Rachel Tocotin, the actress, on the screen, that was something he added in. Also, very, very brief mention in the background of blue skies on Mars, where the technician is implanting the recall memory, and he very quietly, you have to listen for it, he goes, oh, blue skies on Mars, that's new. That will come back later. I'll explain why then. So, more Arnie noises when he wakes up and he's having a schizoid.
And you can tell a lot of these sounds have been done in post. I would like to see the ADR session where he's just standing there doing those noises.
I think about that a lot. Just what it takes to be in that booth and someone like, okay, go.
Make sex noises.
So Bob McLean is not a fan of the female doctor. Use your head, you dumb bitch. He's just acting out the secret agent portion of his ego trip. She gets the final word. That's not possible because we haven't implanted it yet. Marnie has actually been to Mars, or hasn't. This is the point where it all could be becoming a dream, or this is really happening. Think on that, because we're going to have to discuss it at some point, and it's a big conversation. So, I have another question. They get scared because he's had his memory wiped of Mars, is what they say, and they realise that it must have been the agency. This is the only real mention of the agency in it as this sort of power. You know, they're not really, like, Cohagen isn't the agency, I don't think, or if he is, he's never announced as Cohagen as part of the agency. It's just another weird tidbit that I'm like, who are the agency? Okay.
No, I think you're right. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
Don't you think Cohagen's behind a lot of this stuff, though? Because there's an on Mars, there's an identical lab to this one where they do Quaid up there. So it feels like he has access to this technology.
Yeah. So they dump him in a Johnny cab.
Fucking hell. I remember these. Mm. Oh, my God. They're dreadful.
Creepy as fuck,
they're
right?
They're so, so scary. Mm, but what's the point?
A podcast favourite, though, playing Johnny cab.
Yeah, Robert Picardo.
Oh, really?
Picardo, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah,
yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's better.
Of Inner Space fame. We were big fans of him in Inner Space.
Yeah.
And also Gremlins too. We had him in that too. Yeah. Another thing that exists now, self-driving cars.
Yeah.
Along with, although we didn't mention it, it's a little one, but they have portrait framing on the video calls as opposed to just a square. On all the, when Bob McLean appears on the video call from the office to the other, it's portrait. Anyway, now we're into the part of the film where Quaid is being attacked by his friends. Harry turns up, and this goes back to what you were saying at the start, Chris, about where this falls apart a little bit, because it's Arnie. So this is the part where in the original story, it's a guy who was a pencil pusher, an accountant who has no skill, who you wouldn't believe could win in a fight, who suddenly has all these shit-hot moves, disarms people and kills them, a bunch of guys who you know, are attacking him.
And that's why this scene works better in Bourne Identity.
Mm. Yes.
Because Matt Damon looks like any bloke, pretty much every man.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a superhuman. Isn't it? This is a superhero basically doing this.
Yeah. And then, but then there's a through line to Minority Report, and it's where an action star, you know, he's an action movie star and kind of wrecks the other side of the narrative coin, which would be the surprise. Because in Minority Report, Tom Cruise can run fast, as he says a lot, but there's no reason why he's more equipped to deal with all those like special forces and stuff like that. He just wins everything. But why? Because he's Tom Cruise. And so in this, why? Because he's massive and he's Arnold Schwarzenegger. He like massacres five people.
Yeah, I mean, Arnie, there's an interview from Starlog magazine that I found when he was on set and they're interviewing him about this scene. And he goes, the first fight Quaid has is with his friends. He thought they were his friends. And he's shocked by reflex movements he didn't have to think about. Just boom, boom, and they're gone. Like, no one watching this thinks that you're going to be, like, you do not look surprised.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's in your ability to look surprised at you kicking ass. You're fucking Arnie.
All right, now you're quoting Arnie saying funny things. Have you listened to? I listened to the full commentary on the Blu-ray, but also a few years ago, someone put together a compilation of Arnie saying what's happening on screen. So rather than commenting on it, he's just explaining to you what you've just seen. It's I'll play you a couple of minutes, but it's mental.
This is me, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and this is me on a screen here, riding towards the camera. It was a great scene because she's trying so hard for me not to see the news. You can see here with the eye, you know, no matter what I do, the kissing, the hugging with her, I'm more interested in what's going on Mars.
Just saying what's happening. We can see it.
And I'm totally amazed.
And I'm looking
at the gun.
Yeah, so this is really this.
Exactly. How did I do that? Here's the great fight scene with Sharon and me. Ow, that hurt. I continuously used him as a human shield. Then I threw him down the escalator. And now he just got the message that he should actually put a wet towel around his head.
We just heard it.
So they cannot detect of where I am. I run around like an Indian. That's a funny scene. She's trying to steal the suitcase. This scene is unbelievable because my frustration about this taxi cab does not understand where I want to go. Then I got away.
All right, that's enough. You can have a bit more of that a bit later if you like, because there's 4 minutes of gold from Arnie there.
God, that is so exhausting.
He doesn't understand how commentaries work.
I don't know. I think that's a joke. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. He's like, yeah, I'll do the commentary. There's a bit that I listen to. We'll get to it. Because he's back now. Sharon Stone's learning tennis, looking hot. I love that outfit. But the cat's out of the bag now. And so she decides to kick Quaid's ass while revealing extremely useful information about their relationship has only been on for 6 weeks. She's not really his wife, but she will have sex with him for old time's sake. And she'll even let him tire up. But it's all a delaying tactic because Richter is here and his goons. And I know we use goons as a sort of general statement about bunches of henchmen. These guys are the definitive goons. Like, they just look like goons. They act like goons. They die like goons.
Yeah.
These are proper goons. We only even learn one of their names, which is Helm, his right-hand man. Everyone else is just cannon fodder.
And also, Helm's sort of memorable looking, whereas the others, I couldn't tell you what they look like.
I couldn't either.
I think it's brilliant the way they can cast goons like that, though, where you definitely know the leader, the second in command you recognise, and the rest of them could be anyone.
Arnie says, clever girl. Before Jurassic Park made it a thing.
Weird.
So we get Richter. Michael Ironside is Richter. As a kid, so it's weird. Like, as a kid, I remember thinking Richter was super uncool, like as a villain. Like, I never, you know, like some of it, like Alan Rickman, like you'd seen Die Hard, you're like, Alan Rickman, cool villain. Or if not cool, like
tough.
Yeah.
You expect the villain to be tough, especially like, you know, he's going to fight Arnie at the end. You want someone a bit, I guess, more physically imposing than Michael Ironside.
Yeah. Like, you know, even people who are like, do something like really like super psycho, like Gary Busey in Lethal Weapon, like Mr. Joshua, like there's something about him. Michael Ironside, I don't think he's helped by the fact that he is also the most ineffectual villain I've ever seen on screen. In terms of like having to take on Arnie, he literally spends the entire movie trying and failing to kill Quaid and then standing there as Quaid escapes off into the distance looking livid.
Yeah, they're doing it on purpose, though. I feel like that's an aspect of black comedy, because the moment after we're introduced to him, his second in command is mocking him because his missus has been boning Quaid. So he's never... you realise immediately this guy isn't quite in charge like he thinks he is.
Yeah. Yeah, we get our first really, really extreme bit of violence. How did little teenage Tilly deal with using the human body as a shield on the escalator?
Well, I wasn't particularly bothered by it. I'll be honest. It didn't affect me all that much, whereas that became the big controversy, you know, reading the newspapers and magazines at the time, that the civilian casualties not really mattering in this film. I'd never really made it was a disconnect to me between the characters and bystanders. It was just people being killed, and that's what action movies did. But yeah, the MPAA had real problems with this.
Mm-hmm.
On the commentary, Paul and Arnold very much enjoy it. Arnold chucks the body and he's on the commentary says, "What else are you going to do under the circumstances?" And Verhoeven says, "Might be controversial to some, but that's just a piece of meat to me."
Right.
And then, Arnie says, as he steps on the body going over it, Arnie laughs. And then goes, "No regard for human life," and then laughs some more.
Yeah, that's because Verhoeven puts a little squelch sound effect over the bit where Richter stands on his own goon as he's stepping over it. There's a sound because he's all bloody. And yeah.
Did you guys have a problem with it? I mean, obviously it's morally reprehensible, but it's part of the fun, I thought.
I think one thing for me in this film is there's a lot of shooting. And so because there's so, it doesn't build to that. It's just when everyone starts shooting, everyone's shooting at the same time. So it's just a lot of noise. And because there's no like dramatic build with that, it just washes over me. So I was conscious of an escalator corpse, but I was like, in all this noise, it got drowned out, literally drowned out.
Mm. I mean, that is the through line for me is that is the Ed 209 Mr. Kenny scene from RoboCop in this movie. Mm. It's not quite as bad.
I find that much more frightening than the RoboCop one. That genuinely, yeah. I find that hard to watch. Whereas this, it's just a random.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a bloke who's begging for his life, basically.
And this is in a world, well, I mean, RoboCop's a good, yeah, it's not the right example because this is a world that isn't quite ours. And so you would be a little bit detached from people, maybe.
Yeah. God, that Ed 209 scene. It's one of the scariest things I ever watched as a kid.
Mm.
This was X-rated, though, initially, before they did all the MPAA's cuts to it, just like RoboCop. So, Quaid escapes, and not for the last time, Richter stands there, looking livid as he does. And then, like you say, there's a bit about porking his old lady. And then we get Cohagen's appearance on the video screen. And Richter clearly doesn't know exactly what's going on. He's trying to neutralize the traitor, yada, yada, yada. But Quaid escapes, gets the suitcase from a guy who looks like a roadie who's in it for like 2 seconds, has an argument with an old woman who tries to steal the suitcase. Apparently there was some kind of action sequence there that Gary Goldman had to rewrite, which is why that gag sort of sticks out as just a bit weird and awkward. Like they, for time reasons, they had to sub it down. So they inserted that old woman, older woman as a little joke scene there, which he references. So Quaid doesn't pay for his Johnny cab and the Johnny cab tries to kill him. Is it malfunctioning or is that
what... made of fucking dynamite? Is it not a safety, like a product safety issue that if your self-driving car hits a wall at a few miles an hour, the fucking thing goes up like it's doused in explosives?
Are they allowed to murder passengers who go, "I'm not"?
And also, he's going, I can't remember, he's like, "Just go, just go." And he's like, "Where do you want to go?" He's like, "Just say a fucking street. Like, say any street that you know and it will go there."
How many streets does he know?
Oh, any? I don't know.
On Mars.
Well, just say the high street.
He doesn't want to go to Mars in the Johnny cab. He needs to get a space shuttle.
Say, town centre, please. Quick as you can.
Oh, so we meet Hauser on the video screen. And this, wow, mind-blowing as a kid to find out that Quaid, Arnie, isn't him. He's not him. He's Hauser.
Oh, I think you're being generous. I think, which is understandable because you have a lot of love for it, but... And, you know, I do have a lot of love for Arnie, but I think in the hands of perhaps a more high-minded actor,
mm-hmm.
you would have seen the difference in personality. You would have had a bit more to play with, do you not think? Like, I love it for what it is. It isn't the film it started off being, and it isn't this very cerebral, high-minded thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think if it was that, and you've got some actor being like, "Oh, I'm Richard Dreyfuss, and I'm the complete opposite of the man you've just seen," the impact would be loads.
And I wouldn't have been watching it at 11 years old and I wouldn't have enjoyed it at 11 years old because that's not what I wanted. So, and I will.
What, you didn't like Richard Dreyfuss films?
I fucking love Richard Dreyfuss.
I know, exactly.
Right, exactly.
Do you remember when you got him confused with Richard Gere, though? Do you like Richard Gere?
No.
I do think they maybe... I feel like the line, "Howdy, stranger," was written before they cast Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't trip off his tongue like it does an American person.
Yeah. I thought that was in there just immediately make you go, "Well, Hauser's a dick." Just anyone who goes, "Howdy, stranger," I'd be like...
I don't know. If Patrick Swayze said that, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So... Rob Button's wonderful work pulling that thing out of his nose. It reminds me,
bonkers. My head could fit in his nostril at that point.
Yeah. It's the thing I was saying about not making things micro. Like, why is it the size of a light bulb? But maybe it went up there small and then expanded when it was in there. Because how did it get in that size? Same way?
But it's the prosthetic head that really, like, Arnie, as we've seen before, he has the perfect face to make a prosthetic head out of, and it still sort of feels like Arnie.
Yeah, I think that's true.
It's quite angular, and you feel like he could be made of metal.
Yeah.
I think that is the best prosthetic, though. I think that's the one that's held up best.
Probably, yeah. It's probably because it's all scrunched up as well, so you don't need to see the eyes as much as the later ones. But yeah, it's great. Reminds me that tracking device in this whole sequence reminds me of The Matrix, and when they rip the tracking device out of Neo, and that, even down to the fact that it's got this red light that eventually goes out when it's pulled out. I'm like, okay.
And of course, this is literally the end of an era, because Terminator 2 is the next year. So this is when the moment that prosthetics end in these big movies and it becomes computer generated. So I love that film for this.
Yeah. And we get a very little soupçon. A little soupçon of the hologram. The hologram watch, which is great. And I think its placing and the length of time it happens for is perfect.
Yeah, me too.
Because you forget.
Yeah.
It's like you just have no memory of it. And like, you're like, I wonder when that's going to come out.
It's totally justified because he's got this box of tricks. He knows nothing about it. So in terms of your exposition, you're totally allowed for him to go, oh, what's this? What's this? And then just be mature, leave it and bring it back later. Really good.
Get your ass to Mars. Get your ass to Mars. So we're going to Mars. Crossfade from the rat blood on the screen to the red skies of Mars. So I was listening to the spaceport announcement this time. How do you feel about this, Victoria? Air is limited. No smoking is permitted anywhere in the colony. I like Mars. I think I'd like to go to Mars. It looks just the right sort of level of dive bar scummy for me to enjoy. But an entire planet you cannot smoke on.
But that's one of those things where they've seen in the future, because that would have probably seemed quite shocking then, whereas now it would be quite normal to have.
Yeah, if you live under the sea or on Mars, sure. But like, you know, I'd have lit one, then put my spacesuit on, walked outside and just had it in the spacesuit.
Circulating around.
So we get a full introduction on the dangers of Mars here. Oh, sorry, nearly forgot the iconic 2 weeks scene.
Priscilla Allen. Give her some credit.
Why does no one help her? Like, are the breadcrumbs? No. Yeah, and everyone's just like,
I ain't going anywhere near that shit. If you saw someone doing that, would you be over there?
No one is like, oh, God, are you all right?
Of course not. She's sort of flapping her arms and
everyone's just watching.
It's brilliant, but you wouldn't help. You just stand and watch.
I'd get at this point in time, I would get my phone out and film it.
Yeah,
this is brilliant.
They missed a trick there with all their future tech. Yeah, but we blow out the dome, and you see what happens. Mars is dangerous.
So just remember the bit they blow out the dome, and he's like, "Close the doors! Close the doors!" Why have you got to press a button? Like, why is there not a system? It goes, oh shit, the door is open. Let's close the door.
Yeah. There's a little weird bit, little touches like this that I love, where the guard has got leather gloves on, and that's what prevents him from gripping onto the thing and he gets sucked out. I have a weird thing. It's like the start of Cliffhanger. Sylvester Sloan can't hold on to her because of his gloves.
Yeah.
Dr. No, at the end of Dr. No, can't climb out of the pool because of his weird metal hands. So, yeah, I think it's...
Glove vanity.
It's something about that. Something about that upsets me. So, we meet Cohagen. We've been drip-fed a lot of information about Trebidium, about the war on Mars, but it's great to finally meet Cohagen because... Ronnie Cox is brilliant, and his introduction in front of Victory goes, you know, I love it up here on Mars, you know, and one day if the rebels win, it might all end. And you're fucking making it happen! He's so good.
Is he playing his character from RoboCop?
He's better than it is in RoboCop because he's literally, he's basically RoboCop's, dick dialed up to like 15 from 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he has no rules. He's like the master of Mars. Mm. So, question, which we'll get onto when we discuss whether it's a dream or not. Why, if it's a dream, this is one of the few scenes that doesn't have Arnie in.
Mm.
So it's like, why is this scene there? Why is Arnie dreaming about plot points that would help him
in
his dream?
Because in your dreams, you aren't always in every scene.
That's true.
You can dream about things that you aren't involved with, Alex.
And it's just convenient, though, that he's dreaming useful information about Cohagan's sure. plan.
He's dreaming a story, though, isn't he?
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I dream stories.
Do you?
Yes.
You're like a dream factory. Just write those babies down. That's how you weave your magic.
It's weird now.
So, Mark.
It did sound like you were showing off, actually.
A little bit.
It just came to me in a dream. Yeah, I know. Four sequels, right? But it just came to me in a dream.
It's porn.
Excellent. The Mars Hilton is where we're heading now. Mars has a Hilton. So, thumbprint scan, more future tech. There was a line here that got cut because Verhoeven didn't want to go too big on the wisecracks. And there was a line where Arnie is checking in as Brubaker is his identity. And the clerk goes, "Welcome back, Mr. Brubaker. What do you think of our new spaceport?" And the joke was going to be, "I was blown away."
Great.
Mm-hmm. That was right to go. So we go down to Venusville, which is where a lot of the mutants on Mars live. We find out that Cohagan is responsible for the mutations, cheap domes, no way to clean out the rays. And then we're into the last resort.
Worst part ever.
Just before that, the little girl comes up to him and says she bets she can guess her birthday. And so that's where the Total Recall 2 Minority Report stuff comes in, because she's clairvoyant. And that was a plot point they were going to use in Total Recall 2. The idea would be that Quaid would become head of a company that can see into the future and protect citizens by eliminating criminals before they commit crime using these clairvoyant mutants. And that's where Minority Report came in. Just a little aside.
Yeah. She does walk up to Arnie and goes, "I can guess your birthday." And Arnie's like, "What is it?" And she's like, "You're a Taurus." Not a fucking birthday.
True.
She's immediately reduced her odds.
It's a big margin, isn't it?
1 in 365 to 1 in 12. And he still gives her some money. I'm like, just say I can guess your star sign. That's still impressive. Don't lie. It's just, I mean, she's a child. She should know better. You know, she hasn't been brought up very well. So we're at the last resort. Never has a strip club had such bright lighting.
Oh my God, that's in my notes. Last resort, worst bar ever, far too bright. I hate a bright pub.
Who wants to go into a strip bar and
see everything?
I want to see everything.
My dreams are bright.
If there's more than two breasts on each woman, I want to see everything.
What would you do with a third? I get it, and it made me laugh. It made me laugh the first time and again, and it's like, whatever. But I don't know. I don't know.
It's not like she grew it intentionally. It's part of the...
That's true.
She's a mutation.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, what would you do with a third?
What would you do with a third?
Same as you do with the other two.
Triplets. Okay, triplets. Fine. Okay.
Right, okay. In fact, you found a function for them.
There you go.
There you go.
Rinse the joy out of that.
I don't know. You made it sexy.
Right. Well, nonetheless... she's there, our old friend Lycia Naff from Lethal Weapon, where she plays the sex worker Dixie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
No. So I do have an interesting little story about the breasts, the triple breasts. So this is an interview from just last year from Verhoeven, 81-year-old Paul Verhoeven, says it was Rob Bottin who made the three breast prosthetic, and it wasn't what Verhoeven wanted.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Verhoeven said that, "I know that some woman had, let's say, not two nipples, but they have four nipples, like a dog, whatever. That's what they have. They exist. Basically, I've seen the medical photos when I was at university, and I knew that. I wanted four nipples and breasts, with big breasts and smaller breasts underneath." And Rob Bottin, he said, "I think I feel that's too realistic for the film, and that three breasts would be more saying in keeping with the style." And he does say...
It's like a breast shelf. Like a wave of
like
of
udders,
breasts.
Yeah.
Aww.
Well, that's what he's basically talking about, you know.
Dog udders.
Yeah. Breasts with then lower breasts underneath, very sort of realistic looking as opposed to...
All I can say is well done, Rob Bottin.
And indeed, that is what Paul Verhoeven says at the end of that monologue. He goes, "He was right." So
we meet Melina. She thinks Hauser didn't really love her, so his game's up, hence why Cohegan put Operation Turn Hauser into Quaid into action, because he was rumbled by Melina as Hauser. So we learn why he's gone to Earth and they've had to wipe his brain, and Hauser's agreed to all this because he was rumbled. We meet Tony. Love Tony. He gets angry.
It's Hank from Breaking Bad. Who knew?
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't check
no,
that.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's what? Dean Norris. It's Dean Norris. Madness.
That is madness.
Oh, who knew?
You can't tell.
Oh, yeah. Well, Melina asks her co-worker, Thumbelina, that is the character's name, to take care of him for her. So Quaid's first meeting with Melina doesn't go well. It goes for a lie down in his hotel room. That's literally what he does. Take me back to the hotel.
Suddenly, I'm so fucking stressed.
Cut to him lying on a bed, sort of having a little think. It's like, this is the boring part of the dream. Then we get the Dr. Edgemar scene. This scene was freaking amazing when I first watched it, and it still is. Just because at this point, especially as a kid, your perception of what this movie is blown the fuck apart.
Yes.
Like, you were suddenly facing a character who's going, you were still strapped into the chair at Recall. I've been implanted. All of this happens. And then Sharon Stone turns up and everything. And she's like, Quaid, I'm here too, darling. And can't do her. And then a bead of sweat runs down the doctor's face. That is enough for Arnie. He attaches a lot to that one bead of sweat, because he is like, bang, kills him dead. And I don't know that I think that's... There's different ways of looking at this. Like, the assumption that I think we're meant to assume that, wow, so because he's sweating, he's really there, mm-hmm. and he's nervous because he could die,
mm-hmm.
and that's why he's sweating.
Yes.
Is there a way of looking at it whereby Arnie doesn't really care at this point, because he thinks maybe this is a dream and maybe this doctor is here telling me to wake up from recall, but I don't want to because I love this freaking dream so much. I love being a spy.
Yeah, I think the other way of reading it is he's invented the drop of sweat in his dream because he doesn't want to leave the dream.
Mm.
Oh,
that works as well.
Yeah.
Honestly, I really thought long and hard watching the film this time, and I really think every scene can be read both ways. I think because they were, you know, it was so intentional all the way through. I think they've brilliantly done it. Mm. I think they walked the line so cleverly.
Yeah, that's very true. And when we get to the end, woof, which isn't too far away now, great spit where Arnie spits out that pill on the dead doctor. Solid spit.
But amazing, you know, they take the red pill from the Matrix used.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, oh...
Yeah, oh, I know what you mean.
I wish the waitress hadn't done it that closely to this.
It's weird, isn't it? Because the Wachowskis, I had to look around and they do not credit this sequence with inspiring them for the red and blue pill, despite the fact that the colours of the pill are the same.
Naughty.
Great to see Sharon Stone kicking some ass, beats the shit out of him because he made her come to a planet she hates.
and Verhoeven, Vic Armstrong did a lot of the stunt choreography and fight choreography in this, who we'll talk about soon because he was did all the Indiana Jones movies. But yeah, their big thing was, we don't want to do the traditional cat fight. There'll be no pulling of hair in this scene. This is going to be two women kicking the crap out of each other.
Mm.
And it is brilliant.
It's great.
And how many times does she kick Arnie in the balls in this film? I think it's three times he gets smacked in the balls.
Where else are you going to hit him to have any sort of effect?
Verhoeven says it's not a cat fight. It's two warriors using martial arts.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
He also talks about that look that Sharon Stone gives where she sees that Quaid has got the upper hand on her. And she's reaching for the weapon out of her slacks. And he says the way her face changes in that scene from like fury to sweetness.
I can give you the line from, he says, from diabolical to charming.
Diabolical to charming. That's part of the reason he wanted her for Basic Instinct. Mm. That, and to take revenge on her not getting a kiss off earlier in this. The perv. Right. Now, she gets killed. Consider this a divorce. Great line. This is where you've got to give full credit to Michael Ironside. Because for me, at this point, Michael Ironside has been giving 110 fucking percent as Richter. It's like, there can be no more in the tank. It's almost like Paul Verhoeven is going, so now your wife has died? And he's like, sorry, what?
I've got to give more. He's like, do you not read the scripts? I skimmed it. You've got to be even angrier. And he pulls it out of the bag. Yep. He somehow manages to look even more livid than he was before.
I think it's a I love it, but wouldn't it have been good if he looked more like broken by that, like, and then angry? I don't know. You know, there can be two things.
Like, doesn't he look broken when he bends over her body? Yeah. I feel like that's the first moment you actually feel some sympathy for him, because you realise, oh, he really did love this woman.
Do you know, I felt sympathy for him earlier because I was reading too much into his character, but he is a man who's trying to do his best and he keeps getting told off like a child. Mm. He keeps getting chided by Cohagen, and he just wants to be good, and then he gets told really explicitly, you're not even in this plan, you fucking moron, kind of thing. And he's a yes man, he's a company man. Mm. And he wants to be liked by his boss, and he can't get it right, and I did feel sorry for him.
And in the back of his head the whole time he knows that Mr. Universe has been boning his wife. Like, that's really got to affect you psychologically after a while.
Yeah. But he does go more unhinged now, because he decides to just kill them all in Venusville. In the last resort, he kills Mary, the three-breasted prostitute.
Sex worker,
thank you. The three-breasting is fine. Then Thumbelina kills Helm by stabbing him in the crotch, I believe. And Quaid escapes with Benny, the cab driver, to see Quarto. And Cohagen seals off Venusville, which gives us our ticking clock for the final part, as the mutants there, in fact, everyone there, is gradually going to run out of air. So we meet Quarto, brilliant creation.
Oh, I love this so much.
Why?
The voice. Mm. I don't know. And like, the creature effects are amazing, but the fact that it's a small person and he's in George's stomach, so it's like a baby. But the eyes are like milky and blown, but he's got these little teeth. Like, it's all so terrifying. It looks like, have you seen those documentaries about like when you find a secret twin inside your womb? It's like eaten.
Vicky,
yeah,
don't,
but it does.
Don't.
And sometimes they've got hair and teeth and nails, and they were like a full thing. Mm. But it
gave me flashbacks to Society. I feel like there's something gooey about
the,
that.
You must be able to do the voice. The voice is just unreal.
Open your mind.
Oh, yeah.
Quaid.
Open your mind. And amazing.
And apparently, it's the actor. Yeah, it's the George actor, which is great.
He's called Marshall Bell, and it's just really scary.
My missus got home from work as that scene came on, and she walked in the room, and she's like, "What the hell are you watching?" I cannot explain what that is. I'm so sorry.
Another of your dreams, is it?
Write them down, darling.
More clairvoyance here as well, though, isn't it? They were seeding that for this potential sequel.
What's the difference between a clairvoyant and a psychic?
Is this a joke?
About 20 quid.
That'll do. God, you are good, actually. So I've been taking the piss.
And Quarto's last words, because Cohagen's men turn up because Benny, the bastard, led them there. He's like, start the reactor. Free Mars.
Which is good, because it's actually quite practical advice rather than... open your mind.
Which is great. It's the good bit that I think that I hadn't picked up on before here is that Quarto explains to him that it doesn't matter who he was, it's his actions now that will define who he is.
I find it fascinating because, to me, nothing wrong with the film and saying that, and you need that at that point because he's a man who doesn't know who he is. But to me, it's just profoundly not, it's not true. Because I think it's just a particular, like, I'm scared to death of losing my memories, because I think action defines you as a person, but your memories define your actions, because you look back and you're like, okay, I did this and then this happened, so now I'll do this. Mm. You're not just a person reacting in the moment, completely free of all the things you've done and seen before. And when you are... And also, how would you know who you are? Like, how would you know if you're good or bad if you've got no touch points in your history? Like, it terrifies me.
So you won't turn the reactor on? I'm not sure I understand.
Can you imagine me going, just one second, because I'm fascinated by your take on it.
Why are you talking so fast? Actually, he's about to put a bullet in me. I just want to die knowing you're going to turn it on. Do all women talk this much?
Like, I said that about this about Cyrus last week when we were doing The Warriors, though. This is, I think, Quarto is an example of a character that's on screen for 2 minutes, and yet I'm absolutely devastated when he gets killed.
Me too.
It is really heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. So we find out a big moment. This is one of the moments that Gary Goldman added. This is, he goes, the most important contribution I made to this script was that I added in the Hauser and Cohagen moment where Hauser turns to Quaid and goes, you know, I'm a dick, basically. But he basically says that and he goes, I want my brain back. He doesn't, sorry, because Phil Stark was lying.
Bloody Phil Stark.
I want my brain back.
He's implied that in your memory.
And this is, I think it's really important because it sort of, it ties together everything that went before. And the idea of not having this here is puzzling because you do want to, no, I guess if this didn't exist, the way you'd feel about it is that, okay, so Hauser was a good guy, mm-hmm. and he did genuinely give up his own mind to Quaid with no intention of getting it back to free the rebels, which changes everything.
Yeah.
And doesn't work for me anyway. Anyway, after this brief stop, Cohagen becomes properly villainous by not turning on the air back in Venusville, mm-hmm. despite Quaid's pleas, with the classic line, Cohagen, you've got what you want, give these people air. And then an even better moment, it is his own officer appears on a video monitor to tell him that the inhabitants of Venusville won't last an hour, to which Cohagen dispenses possibly one of the greatest F-bombs in cinema history, where he goes, fuck 'em.
It's in my notes as well. The delivery of that fuck 'em is perfect. Mm. It's so good.
Fuck 'em. yeah, you have to be a proper cunt to be able to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but not to be like, this is my moment, to be like, fuck them, and the yeah. camera, but it's just like, oh, fuck it.
Fuck them. I think I've got it, actually. I think I'm going to start using that a lot more. Fuck them. We are now reminded that this is an Arnie movie. So when they strap Arnie into a seat with metal clamps down, and he's trapped there, and they're going to erase his mind and fix Melina, Arnie does not need a plan to escape. He doesn't need any help. He doesn't need to know anything from earlier in the film. He doesn't need to have learned anything or hidden away a tool. Hauser gave him nothing for this moment. He's just freaking Arnie, and he just goes,
gonna Hulk out of
I'm
there.
Just going to get out.
He's strong. The thing that he rams into someone's neck, that thing isn't even pointy. That's round at the end. So, I mean, that's some strength to get that through skin.
Yeah, what is up with those scientists anyway? Now, if I was a scientist and I just watched Arnie break out of a chair and plunge a metal round-headed spike through like my mate, I'd go, oh, my job description to help here, I'm a scientist, I'll probably leave.
And also, how can a spike be round-headed? Isn't that a contradiction?
But they're all piling in, these scientists. They're like, I want a bit of that. Yeah, come on. True. Like, no scientist you've ever met who runs towards a machine like Arnie goes, come on then, mate.
Verhoeven said this is the scene as well they had to cut the most for the MPAA. This was a lot worse initially.
I bet they did.
And they get free, and then Melina pretends to be brainwashed for a couple of seconds. It's not the time, love. It's not the time for gags. I like that you've got a sense of humour, but not right now.
Oh, yeah, she does, doesn't she?
Oh, dear.
Wow.
That's true. You're right. She just doesn't know when to keep her fucking mouth shut.
So this is the moment as well where Cohagen realises he can't keep Hauser / Quaid alive any longer. He gives the orders to kill. He kicks over a fish tank. He watches the fish die. It's all a bit dramatic. And this is interesting on the commentary. Verhoeven says Cohagen considers Hauser a brother or maybe more.
Ooh.
That's something we talked about. That's something Verhoeven thinks that maybe. And actually, when you watch the film through that prism, it does look like he loves Hauser.
That's true. Doesn't he say, oh, you are my best friend or something like that? And it seems a bit like a plaintive.
Yeah, and when he says about fixing Melina, he's going to make her subservient or obedient or something,
Melina's going to become your babe, Hauser's babe.
Yeah, but he says something. I think the idea of him fixing her might mean...
She's going to be fixed, respectful, pliant and appreciative, the way a woman should be.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
God, I forgot. I didn't even highlight that line. That is a terrific line.
And it also suggests that, as in when you walk in on me and Hauser... Haven't it? You're not going to mind.
Going to shrug.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Yeah, and obviously the fish thing is obviously, I never noticed it before, but it's a little foreshadowing of the way he is going to meet his fate.
Oh, that's clever.
He can't breathe.
That's clever. And he watched them. Oh,
he watches them.
That's good.
Gasping for breath. Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of the only other line that comes close for me in terms of the fuck 'em.
I know what you're going
to
say.
Is when Cohagen finally says to Richter, yeah, you can kill Quaid. And he goes, about goddamn time. Can't do that one. Is that the line you thought?
No, it's when Cohagen says to Arnie, you're a stupid dream. I just think that's such a cutting thing to say. But yeah, you're right. It's like a broken hearted thing to say. Yeah. You're just a stupid dream.
Oh, so on the final run now, Benny gets killed with a drill. That death really, for some reason, got to me as a kid. That bit where he can't see where the drill's coming from. Benny, screw you. Even if it's a drill, not a screw, but never mind, you know. It's late in the day. And obviously, if you'd forgotten about the hologram watch, which as a kid I had, the amazing hologram sequence, which is just that bit where, considering Hauser was a bad dude, this is an awesome piece of tech to give Quaid. Like, I don't know, like, because he would not survive if Hauser hadn't have given him this. So the fact that he wants his body back is kind of like, well, don't give him the fucking hologram watch then, idiot. I found another great quote from Arnie's talking to Starlog magazine about this on set and what he was doing in the scene. And this sounds like his commentary. Like, Arnie's way of describing what's happening in a scene is this. I get ambushed in the middle of this whole thing. I fall down. The soldiers realize they didn't hurt me. And to really rub it in, I laugh at them to belittle them. And he really does. You think this is the real Quaid?
Let's hear him commentating over that scene.
Which was a great surprise to him that this huge machine can even break. Oh, this is a great scene where he uses the hologram. Yeah, I love that scene. Yeah. Coming from behind casually, turning off the hologram, and then just nailing them.
Stating the beating obvious.
Yep. And we finally see Quaid and Richter go one-on-one, which is a really shocking death. I mean, what did you think of the Richter fight, other than obviously it's the most one-sided fist fight in Arnie's history?
Yeah, I think you needed to do something to even it up. Either you know, Richter had to have some kind of weapon or Arnie had to be injured. But as it is, one-on-one, not fair. Again, had to be seriously cut for the MPAA. I'm wondering what they cut.
What else is there? He loses his fucking arm.
I don't know if you saw more of the arms coming apart or something, but yeah, that's what Verhoeven claimed.
That scene, I was still to this day, I'm very wary of lifts because of that. And it's the sheer thing between the doors and the upstairs and downstairs. Yeah, it scares the shit.
I'm very
out
wary
of me.
Michael Ironside.
Yeah. See you at the party, Richter. Toss the arms after him. So Richter gone, Cohagen to go, and not a moment too soon because he's used up all his zingers and is reduced to, I'll blow this place and be home in time for cornflakes.
I hate it.
What an awful line.
Is it breakfast?
Looks like at the same time all the time here. Do you eat cornflakes? Do you know what time it is when you're eating cornflakes? Or is that just your snack of choice after blowing up a reactor? So, yeah, it all gets a little, ever so slightly a bit sort of rushed here. Suddenly there's a bomb that he's got and then Arnie chucks it down a vent. Clearly at the end of that vent is a screen that shatters. It's all a bit...
Yeah, but much like this podcast, it feels like it's been going on a long time.
We are
and you're kind
overcome.
Of ready to just get to the end.
All right, then. The reactor goes on in time to save Quaid and Melina, but not Cohagen. Do you want to know... we've just got time. do you want to know how they did those heads? They're inflatable heads. I didn't wait for your answer. They're inflatable
Good,
heads.
Let's get to the end.
Yeah. They're inflatable heads that they filled up with air to make the eyes pop and the tongue come out and then release the air. All
over excellent.
Them.
Makes sense.
Pretty cool. Practical effects, man.
They look like plasticine to me. It looks a bit morph-like.
Yeah.
And then Melina and Quaid, despite their faces stretching and their eyes pretty much popping out of their skull, it returns to normal very quickly because of air. And then he says the immortal line, I just had a terrible thought. What if this is a dream? And she says, then kiss me quick before you wake up. But nevertheless, it works for the end.
What's happening in the sky?
The sky. has gone blue.
It's gone blue. Blue skies on Mars. Haven't seen that before.
Right. So this is one of the big things about It Must Be a Dream. A lot of people in the ongoing debate as to whether it is a dream or not. Now, like you say, it's meant to be read both ways. That is what Verhoeven and Gary Goldman set out to do. It was both of them working together that created this question mark over it. But the blue skies thing seems to be the best evidence for the fact it is all a dream, because you hear it mentioned at Total Recall, at the start, when he's getting his memory, and the guy goes, that's a new one, Blue Sky on Mars. And the fact that it ends up with a blue sky on Mars implies that Recall imprinted it into Quaid's memory, because there is no way for them to know that this alien reactor exists or that it will cause blue skies on Mars if it turns on. Mm-hmm. So that is the strongest argument for it being a dream. Thoughts?
Well, Verhoeven has the film fade to white now as well, which he thinks makes it different from normal films. And so in his mind, it makes it more dreamlike. The music, Jerry Goldsmith has sort of had a dream motif playing throughout the film. He brings that back in at this moment.
Yeah, there's also another little bit where the dream thing, where there's a recall sting that happens when Arnie visits Recall, and there's a little bit of where Dr. Edgemar turns up, and then at the very end of the credits, just before the final fanfare, you hear it again as if to say, thank you for watching this dream, time to wake up.
I always thought it was real every time I've watched it. And I think that's because I wanted to believe it was real.
Yeah.
And that's because they've cast Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Verhoeven says, you being a superhero, Arnold, the audience hope and think it's real. That was me, definitely. I think if it had been a William Hurt movie or a Richard Dreyfuss movie, I think I would have been more into the dream thing. But because I want to believe it's real.
Because you would have seen a weaker man get everything he weaker, that's really mean, but like physically weaker or smaller or whatever, like get everything he wanted. And then it would be really bittersweet. But if it's Arnie, you're not seeing, he could do those things.
And I wouldn't want to feel like I've wasted the last 2 hours of my life on one of his movies. Whereas with Hurt and Dreyfuss, it would have been, oh, this is interesting. This is like science fiction. So for me, I always thought it was real. And now watching it this time, I think it's a dream.
I think it's real because I'm still the 11-year-old boy who will not accept that Arnie hasn't saved Mars.
Sure. I think it's real, but I will let that idea sit with me for a while and see. Mm. Maybe I'll bring it up next week. I'm not sure.
But will you turn the reactor on?
You look like one of them twins, man. Have you got hair?
any more, or shall we do the bits?
Do the bits.
Do the bits, do the bits, do the bits, do the bits. Best scene, Chris.
2 weeks. 2 weeks. It's still astonishing. It's just, I can't believe my eyes when I'm watching it.
It's so cool. And again, that's Rob Bottin, because Verhoeven initially wanted it to just be something that Arnold whipped off. And Rob Bottin was like, no, I got a better way of doing it. I'm going to split it into these little bits and do it like that. And it's going to be much more of an exciting reveal. I know, although Arnie's head underneath the prosthetic head doesn't look as good as
don't
the
care.
Early one.
Don't care.
Don't care either. Fine. Victoria.
The sweating doctor. Because you believe him as the doctor at that point, I did in the film both times. And then when you realise what he's risked, say it's not, he isn't the implant, the cockiness to be like, this is in your head, let's leave, take this pill, knowing that he can get killed, it's really amazing. Like in terms of the narrative of the story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do. He's really rolled the dice, that doctor, by being there.
And he's really good at that.
Yeah. Unless it's a dream, in which case he is fine because he's still in recall. It will have no effect on him.
Yeah.
Oh, but for you, Quaid, the walls will come crashing down around you. Cue a wall literally crashing down moments later. We forgot to mention that. The guys punched through it. So I've got three because it's Total Recall, and God damn it, I won't pick one.
Oh.
It's the meeting with the doctor, Dr. Edgemar, that you just picked, Victoria. It's 2 weeks.
Okay, you didn't need to say either then. We've done them.
Yeah. Or...
Let's do the third one.
See you at the party, Richter.
Okay.
Holding his arms.
Ah, it's the worst one.
EVW Michael Ironside is mine. I love the fact that despite a large portion of the script, him staring furiously as Quaid disappears, having escaped again, he really sells it. And also, you know, not since Bennett and Commando has there been a more mismatched fight that is still really good to watch. Your MVWV.
Rob Bottin. Because it's already a pretty good film, even if the effects were shit, but they're not, they're amazing. So it elevates it and it honours the source material and all of that, like in its weirdness, and it still looks good.
Chris?
I'm glad you said Rob Bottin, That means I don't need to, even though I just have. So I'm going to go for Paul Verhoeven, because the phrase balls to the wall gets bandied around sometimes, but I think it's a good description of the movie that Paul Verhoeven has made here, where I don't think anyone else could have done this. In this, with this violence, with the hard sci-fi, it's just such a balls to the wall movie. And I'm not done with balls.
What does balls to the wall mean?
Oh, it means it's all in there. It's like fucking strapping, mate. This is going to be...
But where does it come from? Where did you put your balls against the wall and then it got to mean you just go all up?
When you don't have any friends to play football with as a kid, you have a wall and you kick the ball against it.
Yeah, that's true.
Balls to the wall.
That's true.
Is that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So it's not testicles, right? Oh, I didn't know
that. That's why Chris uses it a lot.
Can you come back to me for the change?
Yeah, sure. Did you do your change?
No, I forgot.
Do it now. Do it now. No, oh, come wait. To me. I'm saying come to me.
Go to Chris.
Balls.
cut to Chris.
My change is I want balls. Kim Taylor Foster is going to guest on this show at some point. She's written a Matrix, but when we do the Matrix, her thing is balls for boobs. Every time you see boobs in a movie, she thinks you should see some balls as well. She'll talk about it when she guests on. It's a good conversation. Mm. We get three breasts here. We don't get any mutant balls. Mm-hmm. I think we should get three balls or a double dick at some point in this film to even think. What? I thought as a feminist, you'd be all for this.
I mean, just one is enough. I don't know, like a circular thing, maybe, like a never-ending dick.
Two wrongs don't make a right, Chris, and three boobs don't make two dicks.
In my dreams, they do.
Write it down.
Okay, that's interesting. So your literal change for this movie is that you'd like it to feature a scene with two dicks.
Yes! If you're going to have three boobs, I think you've got to have two dicks. Or three balls.
Right.
Four balls.
No one would notice.
Okay. Victoria, way of cleaning the show up towards the end?
excuse me, sorry. I'm laughing, sorry. When the plot sort of all falls and Cohen is like, I've set this whole thing up. Who did you think did this for Quinn and did this for him and did whatever? So when he gets the woman suit, I would like to see him get it and realise why he thinks he's not being set up. Do you know what I mean? Because did I miss something where he is the woman and he's the 2 weeks and whatever? Right. Where did he get that from? Who gave him that?
The suit, it will have been in houses briefly.
Yeah, but you don't see that. Like, I want some suggestion that was going to happen. Maybe I just missed it, but...
You didn't miss it. It's never mentioned until the 2 weeks scene. Well, but that's why it's a surprise.
Yeah, but it's so handy for him at that point, although it does go wrong, I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my change.
Just say two dicks.
A circular dick. A never-ending one.
Well, what do you weigh out of?
I don't know.
Just sort of goes round and round and round.
Yeah. Cleaning it.
A self-cleaning dick. Excellent. Well, my change is two self-cleaning dicks.
Good. We're out.
That's it. That's done. Are we doing a quiz this week?
I mean, yeah, let's do it quick.
All right.
We've got to.
Okay.
Memory quiz. This has all been about memory this week. Mm. So how much attention were both of you paying when you were watching these films?
Okay.
How much do you remember?
Cool.
Okay. What is the name of the sex club on the fly that Quaid finds in his safety deposit box?
The Last Resort.
Yeah.
I love that fly because it says The Last Resort on it. And just think, Clay, he's got a woman with, granted, just the two breasts. And it's pink. And it's very clear what it is. Just in case there was any confusion, the two things it says down the front are sex, down both sides.
What newspaper can be purchased on Mars?
Mars Today.
Alex got there first. What is the soft drink of choice on Mars?
Pepsi.
I mean, Vicky. When John Anderton is going through a shopping mall, what drink do they say he could use
Guinness.
Right now?
Oh, fuck off.
From which clothes shop does John get clothes for Agatha? That'll do. Alex has won.
Sure,
we just kept going till Vicky got one.
Thank you.
All right, then. So, as you know, we are going to be doing indie movies very soon, but one more week to go of Spielberg before we do, well, Spielberg, specifically Indiana Jones. Here is my clue for next week's movies. The clue is this. You get everything. You win. Good day, sir. That's my clue. What?
I want to do a shout out for Indiana Jones as well. Write to us, get involved, because we're going to read them out at ClashPod or show@clashpod.com. Tell us what your favourite Indiana Jones movie is and why, and or give us some Indiana Jones memories of watching the movies. Tell us some thoughts.
Lovely stuff. Bet in touch about Indiana Jones. You don't like the clue, do you? I can tell.
It's great.
Is it?
Yeah.
Kindred spirits, see? Right then, please subscribe to us, rate and review us, and if you have the time, if you have the time, leave a comment as well. That's a review, really, isn't it? Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. We're back on Thursday with Minority Report. Until then, bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.